So the last 10 plus years, a lot of your expertise has been in kind of expressed in developing world situations, especially in Southern Africa, working alongside Nigel Ring and so on. That phase isn't happening now, but you're based much more here in Sussex, focused here in Brighton. How are some of those emphases of serving the poor in the way that you've described, making fishing rods and so on, going to be part of how we move forward in the future here in CCK and beyond? I'm kind of linking this to the question I got asked earlier on, which I waved into this session.
Yeah, I like that question when it came. I don't know if it's possible to put it back up, but I think for me, let's just say that it's a real surprise. Sorry, I'm shaking it. Try and get rid of it. For me, it's a real surprise that I'm sitting here talking about Brighton. I thought I'd discovered something in South Africa, and that was it. I was going to be there. In fact, nearly moved there and really felt that I shouldn't and didn't know why. Where I sit now is to find myself taking some of that experience, taking that, and just a sense of this being my hometown and saying, what could we do with that? And, you know, it's a shock when you realise that actually there is real need in a city like Brighton. And I never really saw that. I quite liked, you know, you walk along the street and it's quite nice to buy somebody a cup of coffee or do something. And I kind of played at that. And then I'd go off to Africa and that's what I did. And the two things were never really linked at all. And if you'd said to me 18 months ago that I would be here talking about the poor in Brighton, I would have laughed. It was not even on my radar. Having said that, I'm now really excited. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. And these guys, the leaders of the church here, asked me to come in and look at what was going on with the work among the poor, among the homeless. And what was interesting, as we discovered as we looked at it, was that the way it was set up, which the ethos was fantastic. Nothing to me, you couldn't be any clearer. These guys have been working at this for 20 years plus. Fantastic what they were doing and the heart of what they were doing. But the problem was, and it's interesting we talk about things like cash flow and budgets and models and sales philosophy, all these things, actually quite often when we're working in a charity work way and working in a charity sector, none of that triggers. And it's really interesting, isn't it? And Joel said, you know, that he puts out a vision and then kind of like, well, you know, the practical ways of what you get there isn't really necessarily what happens. That's what happens so often in the charity world. And I found that. I was got guys who were so passionate, so much about what they were trying to do was brilliant. But maybe the way in which you did it wasn't necessarily the best way. And that's what I've been looking at for a year now. And we're having some great fun and great, exciting kind of challenges of just questioning, you know, well, why do we do it like that? People use the saying, you know, thinking outside the box or seeing the wood for the trees or whatever. And, you know, it's been great for me to be able to do that, having seen what's worked in some of the African places or India where I've worked, and then looking at it in Brighton. Brighton is just bonkers, you know. I mean, I just would never have thought we'd be doing that. But we are. And so to answer the question, we're saying, how can we do more than just put people in a bed for the night and give them something on a drop-in or whatever? And that's a big, big challenge. And I think for us, we're saying exactly what Joel is saying, which is to look at what could the church really do in Brighton to make a difference. And all the things that he was saying earlier about how people's main desire is basically to have a job. Because a job opens up the doors for everything. You know, so many people I talk to who we're working with who've been homeless, they say it's just impossible. It's a catch-22, I think is what you call it. It's if you haven't got a job, you can't get a home. And if you haven't got a home, you can't have a home unless you've got a job. It just goes round and round and round. And so if we're going to break that cycle, well, I believe we've got to break it. Of course we've got to do crisis intervention. Of course we've got to give people what they need if they're desperate. But if we're going to really change it, we've got to create an environment where they can work. And I think that's where, as a church, we don't, as you say, we don't employ them all, but we do actually maybe train them and develop, give them opportunities and take them forward. And that's the fishing rod analogy. Yeah. We teach people to actually make fishing rods, and maybe that will make a difference in the city.
Do you want to make a comment about the real need, even when someone is exposed to the message of the gospel, that the temporal needs are so real? You were saying to me earlier privately that the actually, sometimes someone's conversion becomes the problem, because up until then they've been used to getting by. and now the avenues. I mean, do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a real shock to me when I realised that getting somebody converted to Christianity could be the worst thing that I ever did for them. I'll just pause for effect. If you are able to support your family in an incredibly difficult situation, but the only way you do that is by stealing or by doing the dirty on somebody else, actually realising that that isn't how maybe you should be morally isn't particularly helpful. Because suddenly, actually, you can't even do the very basic things that you would also say God had called you to do or told you to do. So it's a huge moral dilemma. And to me, it's irresponsible to go in and, if you like, a traditional missionary... probably getting into trouble here, but the missionary going in there, saving people's souls if you're not going to do something about their situation. And so for me, the focus I see is that I want to help people because of my conversion, my motivation, not primarily because I want to get them converted. The result of me doing what I do may well get them to ask questions. So this whole thing of being helping with the temporal to open up opportunities for that, which is, you know, a greater, if you like, perhaps need for everybody, is where I'm motivated. And I think as a church, that's what we need to be looking at, is how do we do this out of our motivation, out of what we feel God has done for us. That will encourage us to do what we do. As a result, people will maybe ask us questions. But if they don't, hey, we're doing it because of why we do it. You know, we're not actually doing it to see them safe. That's, I hope, not too controversial, but that's where I'm coming from.
One last question from me. Thanks so much for this, Adrian. It's ever so helpful. I suppose that you kind of had to travel an unusual territory over the years, working closely with church leadership, but really not being... Your main gift isn't in trying to lead a church. But, I mean, I know you've worked hard in serving in church leadership in all kinds of ways, but really your main gift is in business. In some cases, that doesn't work, and I'm sure you've found some that it hasn't worked, but... What are some of the principles that have made it work? I guess I'm thinking about how you've been able to get behind vision when sometimes business would rather not get behind another vision.
Yeah, I did lead a church for 2 years. And at the end of it, I thought, this is a mug's game. I'm never going to do that. I just feel sorry for elders who have to lead churches. It's really hard. The only good thing was we didn't have many pastoral problems for 2 years, but I think that's because I just told people to pull themselves together. But I think it was...
Dave and the fishing rod.
Yeah. One of the reasons that I led a church, I think, was because actually we're in danger. Unless you lead a church or in that kind of role, you haven't really fulfilled what God's called you to do. And so as a result of what I've been through, I actually tell people, don't even think about going there. There's lots of people who need to do that. If that's the only thing you can do, fine. Terry Virgo once said to me, he said, Adrian, do what only you can do. And I think I say that to every one of you. Do what only you can do. That's not an arrogant statement. But if you can do something, and if what you can do, only do, is preach brilliantly, then yeah, that's what you need to do. But, you know, let's look at what else we can do. I'll just tell you one story to explain that. Basically, there are two training centres in India, one in Goa and one in Bangalore. They were both funded by New Frontiers when I was working with Stoneleigh and we raised the money. I had a situation where about 3 years ago at our Brighton conference, and I say this not to be arrogant, but to just give you the story of why I'm trying to say it. And I had a guy come up to me who I didn't know, an Indian guy, and he just said, you're Adrian Willard, aren't you? And I said, yeah. And I'm thinking, oops, what's going to happen next? Because usually when people say that, they're going to say something they don't like about me or something I've done wrong. So, and he said, do you know, he said, you're a legend in India.
Brilliant.
And I'm like, no, I didn't know that. And actually, I don't believe that for a minute. And he said, yeah, but he said, you don't realise. He said, and it must have been like 20 years before. He said, you said something to Duncan Watkinson, who was at the time leading the churches in India. He said, which has changed my life and has changed the way we did things. And he said, I just want you to know. He said, we still talk about what you said. This is great, isn't it? You know, you're like, wow, it must have been amazing. What was it? And I think about it sometimes when, you know, you think, well, did I really, what did I say? And he said, what you did was you stood on a plot of land and you said to Duncan, don't build a training centre for the church, build a training centre for the city. And Bangalore, if you don't know, is like the computer centre, whatever it still is, but it was in those days, like the computer centre of India. And what I'd said to him was, if you build a training centre for the church and try and invite people in, it won't work. But if you build a training centre for the city, that the city accept and see that they can use, and you meet there on a Sunday, it won't make any difference to you, but it will make a huge difference to the way that you run it and the way you do it. And one of the reasons I said that was because I'd actually previously been to the church in Goa, and to where the training centre was, where it was a church building that they were trying to get people to use, and they couldn't. So, pause just for a moment. What I'm really passionate about at this moment in time is how we use the assets which God has given us as a church to bless the city of Brighton, which if we do well and use it for commercial and community use, will fulfil our vision, will help us do what we're trying to do, will actually bring income in, and if we're clever with it, we could then find ourselves being able to, if we do what I call the Jamie Oliver principle, those of you may not know what that means, but Jamie Oliver has a, in his restaurants, he has a program called 17, I think it's called, where he takes unemployed people and he trains them as chefs and they become, gets them employable. If we took the same principle here as CCK, as the church, and we use this building and we train people, so I'm off on one now, but, and we use this building to train people and to develop them, and at the same time, this building, which Julia would say, when guys came here recently, they're like, what? What is this place? We thought this was a warehouse out here. We've no idea that this place existed. It's probably the fourth or fifth best conference facility in the city. And yet we've hardly touched the surface. If we could get that right, and then the people that were serving them, the baristas that we trained that were serving from the coffee shop, were previously homeless on the streets. And then we got hold of them and we taught them, not maybe to make fishing rods, but taught them to serve coffee. And then we got involved and then people saw what we were doing. Now, the ethos of it, not government saying, you do this, you do that, but we're saying, hey, we're doing this on the spot here. We're showing you how it works. Those guys walk down the road to Costa, they go to Starbucks, whatever, who maybe pay their taxes or maybe they don't. But at the end of the day, what we've done is set people up and we've got them out of that cycle. We're out of that situation. I think we've got a fantastic opportunity. There's guys at the back there working on sound, sometimes. There's guys working on video. There's guys, you know, we've made breakfast this morning. We've got tea and coffee. What fantastic opportunity. Instead of sitting here trying to come up with the latest creative idea, why don't we see the woods for the trees? Why don't we look at what we've got, the assets that God has already given us, the assets we've got that we could do something with. That's social enterprise. It's business with a heart. It's not just about profit. It's multiple bottom line, and it makes a difference. You know what? I've never, ever, when I've been in business, worried about being greedy. I don't know who said it, but I'm telling you now, I've never worried about it. I've never worried because when I've run businesses, I've always run businesses for not just my personal gain. And I'm not saying that in a proud way, but I set out for public good as well as personal gain. I funded a lot of what I did overseas by running a successful marketing and advertising agency in Brighton for 10 years. That's what I did. We set up a greeting card range of products. Yeah, we prayed for that greeting card range. We went from nothing to the market leader in the UK. We printed over 1 million Christmas cards for the Christian market. But every single card had a percentage on it that went towards helping those who've got needs. It's a charity card. Loads of people do it. But that's what we did. And we did that. And so what's great about being in business is that I did well. I've driven around in a BMW 3 Series car. When I was a Christian, people frowned on me. Because Joel told me I didn't have to worry about it, I didn't. and it was great. And it was my midlife crisis, and I had great fun. And I got it out of the spoils of what I did well. The trouble was, every time I went to South Africa and then saw what was going on, every time I came back, I couldn't get in it. It was difficult. In the end, I had to sell it, you know. But when I first came in to work with Terry, I had this big, huge black Rover car, 3.5 litre car, and I went from that, most of you won't know what this is, to a Datsun Cherry. I mean, I did it because I felt I wanted to do what God said, but you know what? Never felt guilty for being successful, because it's not what you make that's the problem, it's what you do with it. That's my, and that's what we need to do with this. Churches, everyone looks at it and says, oh, you know, the church got all this, got that. Well, let's get used, let's make it work for those who are vulnerable. Wouldn't it be exciting? You guys, sorry, I'm nearly there. You guys who are in business, when we train people here and get them work ready, here's a great way you can do it, using the thing that Julia said, the apprentice schemes, all those things. You take those guys on and you take them on. But don't expect too much, because you know you're doing it, not just for your own gain, but for their good too. And so we're more forgiving, we're more willing to give time with them. But if we could get that right, that would really make a statement in Brighton. And not only that, we can do that for the community, but we can also do it commercially. We've got fantastic premises here. You guys had a really good deal, but actually, at the end of the day, we can charge for this, charge properly for it, be competitive, and then we use these guys to actually make that happen too. Exciting, eh?
It's brilliant. Well done. Glad we got that. Thanks so much to Adrian and Jolly. Just thank them again. Thanks, guys.